are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Are you ready?
Stand by in one.
I invite you to let this be your moment.
Ready, mic one. Cue tape. And roll.
Make this your moment. Look back at this day and say, this was a day when something happened that really mattered in my life.
And we're live. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to Coffee with Kim. I am here to journey with you to a new day, a new moment. I believe God has led you to this moment and this place because He is about to bring purpose and potential to your story. He is about to show you how your story can touch the lives of others while bringing glory to Him. It's not too late. Today, this moment can be the start of the best rest of your life. So join thousands of women from all around the globe who have discovered how powerful their stories become once Christ touches them with His purpose. Don't you long to make this same discovery? Then grab your coffee, scoot in, and join me as we let God's Word reveal how every part of your past has been preparing you for this very moment. Well, hello there. How are you? Really, how are you? How long has it been since you really thought about that? How are you doing? You know, we're in a society where we're so busy taking care of other people all the time. We're wearing ourselves out, and there is not one thing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, there's so many things that are right about that. As long as we stop to look at that person in the mirror and connect with them. You know, so many times we can lose touch, can't we? I mean, really, what do you know about yourself? How are you feeling? Well, today we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what it is that you're thinking, what it is that you're feeling. We're going to talk about this stress that you don't know what to do with, this sadness that creeps upon you in the middle of the night or at the most unusual times, and you think, what is this? Why am I feeling this way? Why do I feel so alone in the midst of all these people? Why do I feel misunderstood? Why am I out here shopping like a maniac when I know I can't afford it? Why am I doing the things that I'm doing? When is the sadness that we're feeling or those around us feeling? When is it more than just feeling sad? Oh, gosh, don't we need to talk about this? Scoot up to the table. Let's have a real and raw conversation today because depression is real, but it is common, and it's so very treatable. It is a condition that affects so many of us today, and we have to, let's talk about it. You know, I love just hitting things head on, don't you? You know, statistics tell us that only one-third of those who are depressed actually get to the point of standing up to that depression and doing something about it. So what's happening with the rest of us? What's happening to those who just are just not facing it? Well, I can just tell you some reasons why we don't. Sometimes we don't recognize it. Sometimes we think it is just sadness. Sometimes we recognize it and we don't know what to do with it. We don't know who to talk to. We don't know who we can confide in. Isn't that the truth? Don't you wonder who you can really go to and talk to about it? And then many times we recognize it. We know what we should do, but then we just keep putting it off. We think, oh, I'm going to just pray this away. Sometimes maybe we can. Sometimes we think we're just bigger than this, and maybe sometimes we are. But statistics, again, show so many of us suffer alone until something happens when we can't really hide it any longer. And that's what that's what happened to me. I remember years ago, it was just one of those times in life where I was overwhelmed. So many things were happening. I was lost in doing ministry. I was lost in being trying to be the best mom I could be. My mother had just passed away. There were so many things going on in my life that aren't unusual. Those are kind of usual things that we go through in life, but I found myself in a place, and I knew that sadness I was feeling, and I felt like there was this dark hole that I was just walking or maybe sliding into more every day, and I would just I was fighting it. I was trying to beat it, but can I just tell you, I found that it was, can you believe it? I found it to be shameful that I couldn't beat it, and so I denied it until one day something happened and I knew I had to do something. And it was really very simple. I showed up at one of my boys' t-ball games without shoes. Without shoes. I looked down and I was one who took so much pride in being on time, being having all the snacks for everybody, being prepared, and I had gotten my own mindset to where I wasn't thinking clearly enough to even put on shoes. It was something that simple that took me to my knees and helped me to have the courage to call and reach out to a counselor who could really talk to me and walk me through a very sad time. So today, if that's you, if you've connected on any level with anything that I've said, today is your day. And this is your moment to find truth and to pick up your life and learn some tiny steps that we can take. I am so honored today to introduce to you my co-host and dear friend. Her name is Dr. Paula Mitten. Paula resides here in Baltimore. She has a beautiful family. She's given her life to helping those with her expertise as a licensed psychologist. She has been in a private practice for years doing individual and family counseling. She's worked with schools, and I have the honor of seeing her kindness and compassion being poured upon many people within our coffee groups, within our ministry. So without any more, I want to bring on our guest host today, my friend, Dr. Paula Mitten. Paula, thank you so much. Dr. Mitten, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Kim, for that lovely introduction. That was awesome. The topic today was about distinguishing sadness from depression, so I could start there,
yes.
But it can go off in a lot of different directions, especially
yes.
Grief is involved in there, and that's kind of in the middle.
Yes.
But sadness is really a normal human emotion. Everybody feels sad, and it usually is triggered by, like, hurtful or challenging or disappointing events or experiences. In other words, we tend to feel sad about something.
Yes.
That means when something changes, that changes in with what originally hurt us, it fades and we get better. We don't feel sad anymore. With depression, that is more of a serious state. It's more it usually is related to situational events. Also, there is grief. Now, grief is a normal feeling of sadness. Like, it's normal to feel sad when you lose somebody or a pet or a job or something. You
mm-hmm.
feel grief, and that grief is normal. And that, like, if it's a loss of a person that's dear to you or a pet, et cetera, then it's normal to grieve and to feel sad, and it doesn't you don't get over it quickly, like some people say,
right.
You know, snap out of it in 2 or 3 months, whatever.
Right.
It's something that you hurt, but and it affects you. But the difference between that grief, and that grief can last years, but it's intermittent. It gets better than during times of anniversaries. It hits you again.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not depression,
mm-hmm.
because when you have grief, it is when you're grieving, it's about the person. You're feeling sad about missing that person. When you're
mm-hmm.
depressed, you hate yourself. Your self-esteem is really
mm-hmm.
low, you are focused on yourself and how much you don't like yourself and et cetera. With grief, you're just sad that you're missing that person. When you're grieving, you still can laugh. Like you could be at the funeral and someone could tell crack a joke, and you could laugh. You can have periods of laughing or joy intermittently in that, and that's in grief. Now with depression, you're not going to be laughing at all. You're really going down in the dumps, and you're really spiraling down, and you are you're not feeling any of the positive emotions at all. You're just getting sucked down into very, very deep grief. And there's symptoms that you can with depression, if you wanted to know if you're getting involved in major depression versus normal grief or just sadness. And they're like, it comes from the DSM-3 or DSM-5 diagnostic manual. There's the whole thing of it. And the first thing you have to do is go to a medical doctor and make sure if you think you're being depressed and you can't shake out of it and it's just dragging you down, and you should go to the doctor to make sure you don't have any kind of a drug interaction or a thyroid problem or something physical that's causing that, because there are physical things and medications that can make you feel depressed or have the symptoms of depression. So you have to rule that out first before you get diagnosed with a major depressive disorder.
Okay.
I know some people who take Accutane have had severe depression. There's things like that. So you want to have a clear medical bill. Now, the first thing, my personal recommendation is like a doctor sometimes just say, okay, you seem to be depressed, here's medicine. I don't really recommend that. I recommend going to counseling therapy, and I recommend cognitive therapy. I think it's the most effective treatment for depression above medication. There's a lot of statistics proving that. But I can go through the how they would diagnose it, and then you can kind of see if you fit into that.
I love it. May I interrupt right here? Two things there is, one of the things, Dr. Mitten, that I'm hearing you say a lot of that is very comforting to me, and I think might be comforting to my friend who's listening, is you're using the word normal a lot. The grief, the depression, all these are things that are not uncommon to man, that we shouldn't have to feel shame or hide this, that it is something that is common. Correct?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's very common. Now sadness is extremely common. Everybody feels sad at some point. Now, in grief, everybody feels a sense of loss of a job, of a thing. It's when it gets to be too extreme and you can't, and it gets you where you can't sleep, you can't eat, you're not functioning, you can't be happy, you can have suicidal thoughts or a plan, psychomotor agitation, fatigue, feelings of worthlessness, and underneath all that is really low self-esteem. You really feel worthless. And that's where the cognitive therapy comes in there, where the theory believes that when you look at why you're feeling so down, it's usually related, not necessarily a situation, but it's a thought that you have about yourself. And it may be like, and it's extreme kind of thinking. Like it might be like, I feel worthless. Nobody loves me. I feel unlovable. Now that's not a conscious thought. It could be unconscious, but it could just be like you get fired from a job. And, okay, you feel sad, but it goes further where you say, I am useless, worthless. I will never, you have those all or nothing thinking, I will never be able to get a job again. Nobody will ever hire me. I'm going to be destitute. Then your brain cycles down. I'm going to be destitute. I'm going to be poor. I'm not going to be able to survive. I am terrible. I'm awful. And this, your self-esteem is really down. You're really critical about yourself. And if you work with a good cognitive therapist, they will help you identify those thoughts, because your thoughts affect your feelings, and then your feelings affect your behavior. So if you're talking negatively about yourself in your head, then you're feeling very, you're not feeling very good about yourself. You're getting depressed, and you're like, why, you know, why I don't enjoy life. This is not worth living. It's not the way I want it to be. And then when you start feeling that way, then you start acting, and your behavior is you're getting depressed. You're not eating. You're not sleeping. You're not taking care of yourself. So that is a really good treatment that I recommend, and it's been very, very successful and even proven to work better than medications. Actually, a lot of people have gotten off medications when they've done the cognitive therapy. So that's...
See, and I love that, because that's exactly what happened to me when I, you know, when I opened the story, opened the show, and I was talking about, you know, at literally getting to a place and then not even being dressed properly, which it right. had spiraled down to that level. I did reach out, you know, first to my medical doctor, and the first thing that was said to me, you know, here's two prescriptions, you know, take
right.
these, and I felt almost like, and if that's what's needed, fine, that's great, and I'm not, you know, saying anything against that, but there wasn't a chance of after a few months, I realize I'm medicating something within me that needs
yeah.
to be healed. And
yeah.
so, you know, being in Christian counseling, that's what, and I knew I needed to do something. So I moved away and shifted and went in a different direction. And just the going and talking and being able to uncover and have someone help me diagnose what was down in there so that I could start taking the proper steps. And not, you know, I felt like I was masking the mask,
right.
you know, and that wasn't serving anyone any good. So I love that. So can we talk about that right now, Dr. Mitten? If someone is listening and they are yeah. already connecting, what would you say to them? I know we went over just a few, but I want to go over those again. What are some things that could be happening to me privately that no one even knows about that would cause you as a counselor to say, I think you need to reach out to someone, because this is so, there's so much hope in the healing here and taking some steps. So I know with me, my battle was all, you know, on the inside until it started seeping out on the outside. What are some of those inside struggles that someone could be dealing with right now that you think, that it would be good for them to reach out and talk to a counselor or a pastor or a licensed psychologist as yourself?
If within 2 weeks, in a 2 week period, you have five of the following symptoms, and one is the depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day, as indicated by subjective report, feeling of sad, empty, hopeless, or observations made by others. So you have a kind of a depressed mood. Unless you're a child and then you're more irritable or hyperactive, that it's different for children.
Okay.
Second one is markedly diminished interest in pleasure of all or almost all activities most of the day, nearly every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be activities that you usually like and enjoy, and you don't get pleasure in them anymore. You just don't get, you know, you're just not into that. The third one is a significant weight loss when you're not dieting, or weight gain, like 5% of your body weight in a month. So it's either a decrease or increase in appetite nearly every day.
Okay.
And in children, it may be just not failure to thrive. They're just not gaining any weight, and they're just wasting away, kind of. Insomnia or hyposomnia nearly every day. That means like sleeping too much or too little, but your sleep pattern is off. The fifth one is psychomotor agitation or retardation nearly every day, and it's observable by others, not just subjective feelings of restlessness or being slowed down. It's just that you're just kind of pacing and that sort of thing, just kind of constant motion. A sixth one, and you just need five of these, and it has to be within a two-week period every day. It's a constant. It's not just you feel bad for a couple of days and you're okay. Fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day. You're just so tired, you're dragging yourself. Some people are in bed and they can't even get out of bed. That's more severe. But other ones is just like, just don't have the energy to go through the day. And the seventh is feelings of worthlessness or excessive or inappropriate guilt. which may be, mm. it may be delusional. I mean, there's an extreme of major depression. It goes from mild to moderate to severe. So there's a continuum. But just feeling of worthlessness. You just feel like, and that's at the bottom line and the big difference between major depression and grief or sadness is that your self-esteem is involved in this. You just feel worthless and bad about yourself and the world and the future and all that, no hope and hopeless too, hopeless, helpless. Whereas in the other ones, it's more about you're just sad about a loss. You're sad and it affects you, but you still, your self-esteem is still there. Okay, the eighth one is diminished ability to think or concentrate or indecisiveness nearly every day. And the ninth one is recurrent thoughts of death, just fear of dying, but recurring suicidal ideation without a plan or suicide attempt or a plan. Now, not everybody has all these symptoms, obviously. It's five of them. I mean, not everybody's to the point of suicide or thinking about that. If you are, you got to really move on that. But the other symptoms as a package will show something's just not right. And it's easy to slip into that. You can start with grief, and then it can get deeper, and you can get spiral down.
And that's where I wanted to go back to that. It's funny that you should come back to that, because I'm seeing so many friends who are losing. I mean, the last year, I think I've been at over 20 funerals of parents who have buried their teenage children, which I cannot even fathom that type of grief. Tell us, Dr. Mitten, when, you know, grief, you know, people handle it in so many different ways and it's manifested in so many ways, but tell us what we can do in the midst of that deep grief to not spiral into a depression, because I've seen a lot of that and actually saw a couple of suicidal tendencies in the midst of from parents because of this. Is there anything that we can do in the midst of grief that could prevent us from falling into this depression?
There's the normal grief where you're feeling sad and it's a loss and it takes years to and you don't ever get really over it, but it gets better. If you're starting to crossing over in terms of blaming yourself, like it's one thing to feel sad that you lose, but if you're blaming yourself, if you have guilt in there and you're thinking it's my fault, I should have done this, then you're affecting your self-worth. And then that is bringing you down, because you're then criticizing yourself. You're taking responsibility for it. Now, it's one thing to say, oh, I feel bad that I didn't visit them that as often as I should have. That's a little guilt, but not major. The other one is like, I feel responsible for this. I should have prevented this. If I was a better parent, that my kid wouldn't kill themselves. Whatever it is, if you start taking the blame on yourself, that's where you start cycling down into the major depression and pulling yourself down, and that's where you need to get help when you start to like internalize it and blame yourself for that situation.
Even to the point, if it's something, what about if I lose a child in a car accident and I begin to, my thinking is, oh, if only I bought them a better car. Oh, if only they had had better tires. Is that type of thinking?
Yeah, and that also goes into the cognitive therapy, because there's all different of mechanisms that we do to kind of sabotage ourselves and make us feel that way. And like, it's like, you know, it's like the mind reading and the predicting. Like, there's a whole list of things, and one of that is, you know, blaming yourself for something. You have no control of things. You're not a person who lives in a crystal ball and knows the future. So you can't be liable for something that you didn't know to prevent, like not drive that day. I mean, you couldn't predict that. So you can't blame yourself for something that happened, because you didn't purposely like stab the person and kill them. It was an accident. And that's right, where you have to process that whole thing, because in your mind you're telling yourself these thoughts of it's my fault, if I did this, if I did the if and shoulds, I should have done this, should have done that.
Yeah.
Those are all those different distorted,
yeah,
they're called distorted cognitions. And when you have them in your brain, that brings you down, because if you're believing that it's my fault, but they're irrational thoughts. They're not really rational. They're kind of not, when you check them out, they're really not realistic, but you feel that way, and you're not really thinking about that. You're just going through that like it's my fault, and that whole thing. And that's where you need to work with a professional to help you see through that and work through it. Because it's also very difficult to grieve if you're in depression. If you're being depressed, you can't grieve fully. And if you're not grieving fully, then it's a cyclical kind of a pattern.
So it's really important to work through that. Yeah, I'm sorry. I think about even, you know, going all the way back into the Old Testament times with David, how he battled depression when he lost his sons. I mean, it's something, and to hear his words. And I've dealt with that, and we have so many friends who are dealing with that. And I thank you for those words, because I feel like that we can, in that spiral down, if there's a point where we can acknowledge what's going on, and with what you're saying, you're making it so practical that I can really do a check. And for our friends who are listening, it's like, do a check, you know, start listening, you know, to what you're saying to yourself, and let this be an assessment of, oh my gosh, this, what Dr. Mitten is saying is exactly, or kind of exactly what I've been saying to myself, and this is a red flag that this is time for help, and this is a time where hope can begin. Dr. Mitten, we're going to take a 30-second commercial break for a minute, and when we come back, I would like to invite any of our callers, our friends who are listening, if they'd like to call in and ask a question. The number is 347-324-5246. If you'll call that number, press 1, you'll go into our virtual green room, and our producer will be there to greet you and to alert us that you're on the air, and we'll bring you right on to ask your question, and that would be wonderful. Also, an area that I would like to go into when we get back are those people who are falling into grief and depression because of a divorce, especially where children are involved. I see lots of depression, lots of guilt-ridden people. So I'd like to talk about that, Dr. Mitten, when we get back. Sound okay with you?
Yep, great.
All right, so we're going to break for 30 seconds. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, 347-324-5246 and press 1. See you in 30 seconds.
We want to thank today's sponsor, Up to Me Magazine, a new uplifting and inspiring magazine with stories of purposeful living, such as Meet the Minimalist, the story and journey of Ryan Nicodemus and Joshua Milburn. Less stuff, more meaningful life. And an up-close and personal conversation with Will Haygood, author and associate producer of the acclaimed film The Butler by Lee Daniels. And so much more. So get your subscription today at uptomemagazine.com. That's up, the number 2, magazine.com. And what's your story? Now we return back to our program.
Welcome back to Coffee with Kim. We have an incredible co-host today, Dr. Paula Mitten, and we're talking about when being sad is not just feeling sad. We're talking about depression, and we're talking about the statistics of how many of us have actually dealt with this hard feeling of gloom that goes even beyond that we're talking about. And more importantly today, I pray that if you're there, that you will handle this a little differently than I did. I took on so much shame, and I took on so much guilt because of how I was feeling, not truly understanding that this was something bigger than me, that I could get through it. But I had to walk through it. I couldn't just go over it and around it. I needed to take some practical steps. I needed to be in God's Word. I needed to be with someone who could help me break it down and understand it. And that, my friend, is there for you today. I want you to understand that though your grief may be dark and you may feel helpless, that the statistics show that 80 to 90% of those people who step out and seek treatment find themselves feeling better within just a few weeks. Now, that is great hope for whatever despair any of us may be feeling today. So to back that up, and tell us more about these steps that we can take and the ways to look at it, I invite back Dr. Paula Mitten. Thank you again, Dr. Mitten, so much for being here. I love how you are making me feel more comfortable in the fact that, okay, I am not the only one who is dealing with this grief that has, could be spiraling down into depression, and it's okay for me to step out and face this. So thank you for that. Any comments from before the commercial you would like to add on this before we move into depression that can come on from the law, divorce?
Oh, well, divorce is a loss, and major losses do affect us. Now, 25% of people that experience a major loss will, in fact, go on to develop depression.
25%?
Yeah, of people that have a major loss, like loss of job, loss of a spouse, loss of sibling, loss, of a divorce situation is certainly a loss. But it's what you're, again, it's what you're telling yourself about the divorce. Like, are you blaming yourself, saying, if I was a better wife, a better mother, a better whatever, then this wouldn't happen? And then you beat yourself up, and then you feel bad about yourself, and then you cycle down. And again, it goes into your thoughts about it. And you're not consciously always doing that. It's just a feeling, and it's in the back of your mind. It's not like right there. So that's where you would want to go and get help.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody
mm-hmm.
who can help steer you and make you see things in a more helpful way. That, you know, you can't go back in the past and undo things, but you can learn from things that have happened. But you can't beat yourself up over what's happened. You have to learn to deal with a new situation. And that's where that help comes in, because we're not perfect. We all make mistakes, but we're not all equally. And when there's a divorce, it's at least 50-50. It's never like 100-0 or whatever. So, you know, there's a whole bunch of, and it's helpful to just talk with somebody about that before it gets paralyzing and interfering with your ability to function. And that's the major depression thing, where you're not really functioning. As you usually would ordinarily, like if you're sad, you can function and still go to work. If you're depressed, you can still do that, but not as effectively. And the more severe it gets, the less able you are to function. So
let's talk about this.
To get help.
Yeah, Dr. Mitten, let's talk about this for a minute. You know, with what I experienced in my own life, just feeling shame. It's like, oh, I should be able to get over this, and the fear of speaking out. Let's talk about how just being isolated and alone in this can cause the spiral to really accelerate.
People who are depressed tend to isolate themselves. That's one of the things. They tend to withdraw into themselves. They don't not out there asking for help. They're afraid to. They're just kind of just going and just feeling and not going out. And you withdraw more. And that's where people around you come in handy, where family members, if they see that, they have to actively talk to you. And usually you wouldn't always have the energy, if you're very severe, to do something. And sometimes it helps with loved ones around you to kind of say, we're going to make the appointment for you. We see this is going on, and we need you to get some help. So that is important. If they don't have a support system, some neighbor, friend, or somebody can do that. Or sometimes you just reach rock bottom and you know, I got to do something. Or you go to your doctor and say, you know, I'm not feeling well, I'm not sleeping well, whatever, and they figure out you're major depression, and they give you medication, whatever. But ask for a recommendation for a good psychologist. Now, I have this bias against, but with psychiatrists versus psychologists. Psychiatrists do give you medication. They don't do therapy with you. You go to them. Mm-hmm. They talk to you for 15 minutes. And I'm sorry out there if the psychiatrist is listening. That's kind of my experience in the profession. Uh-huh. They have definitely a role for people, because there's all kinds of mental disorders and things that they need, people need medication for, and it's very helpful. But with the depression, you kind of want to go to somebody where you can talk things and work things through and really get deep at what is what is causing it? What is the feeling? Mm-hmm. What are the thoughts in your head that are really causing you to feel mm-hmm. worthless and your self-esteem is really down and et cetera? Where a psychiatrist, they will just say, you clearly have major depression. Here is, Zoloft or Paxil, whatever. And they mm-hmm. try different medications, and then you go back to see them, and they ask how you're doing. But there's no talk in there, right. Usually. I mean, there's an exception to everything. There are some psychiatrists who may do some talk therapy, but mm-hmm. for the most part, they're trained medically more than the mm-hmm. psychological aspect. So that's just my bias in that. I would tend to go to a really good psychologist first. And if the psychologist thinks you need medication too, then you can do both. But mm-hmm. I would...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what you were talking about there is, you know me, and that I believe in talking and communication so much. And one of the activities that you've seen us do in the Burdens to Blessings book and retreats that we do is we do this exercise where we ask people to put on a piece of paper, what are those thoughts, what are those things that they say to themselves, you know, within their own heads that people would not even believe that they yep. say to themselves, and they write it out. And of course we move that around so that no one has to read their own. And Dr. Minton, you've been there with me so many times when isn't it heartbreaking to hear those things?
But it's also enlightening that a lot of people feel that way. Like, we think we're the only ones, who feel like, you're not good enough or whatever. And then you hear all these group of women who are very put together and very, on the outside look perfect and seem like they have perfect lives. But then when you kind of see that, wow, they really have the same kind of feeling. Like, they feel like they're, not smart enough, not good enough, not right, whatever the issues are, or who has anxiety, who has whatever. And they no one talks about it, but it's real life. This is life. We get affected by situations all the time. Nobody has a straight line, perfect life where everything just goes wonderful. You have sadness. You have loss. You have people who are difficult in your life that can make life difficult for you, and it's how you interpret it and how you deal with it and how that is how it affects you. So this helps everybody in terms of knowing yourself and knowing what triggers you and knowing what affects you. And you want to hopefully prevent it from going deeper into a deeper depression. You want to catch it early, but sometimes you don't catch it early because you just kind of get sucked down. You don't realize it's happening until all of a sudden, bang.
And so many times we don't even think about what we're saying to ourselves. And when we do this exercise, women, I mean, there's never, I don't care if it's 10 women or 100 women or 500 women, and I've actually had men do this exercise too. I've done it with men and women together in a group, and we're surprised. And what is amazing to me is the breaking down of the walls that it happens. All of a sudden, there's a scripture in the Bible that says, to be alert. We have an enemy, and his goal is to kill, steal, and destroy. And how does he do that? He roams around the earth like a roaring lion. Well, the roaring lion goes for those animals out there who have isolated themselves, who feel alone, who are hurt and abandoned. And that's a great picture of those who are living in sadness or beyond sadness, depression at whatever level that you might find yourself in, a grief that's slipping into depression, that we do isolate ourselves. We do feel abandoned and sometimes even by God, a lot of times from those around us but a lot even from God. I mean, we could do a whole show on that. But we have isolate ourselves, and we are set up for the perfect attack because we don't have anyone around us who really understands us or even knows what we're going through. So this one activity is so highlighting to really understand that we're not in this alone, and it helps that compassion to come out and for us to connect, right? So we can really be a team together.
Oh, definitely. That's a wonderful activity. Family members and friends sometimes are well-meaning, and they'll be like, they just want to cheer you up, or they'll take you out and eat. But that's not what you, it's good to have that, but that's not going to cure you if somebody just makes you try to make you laugh and have a good time, because you're just so far deep in stuff, and it's just not going to, and sometimes we'll say, snap out of it, it's all in your head, like they make these comments, And that is not understanding, because understanding,
right.
It's not like they're purposely trying to be that way. It's just stuff that's in subconscious and it's just happening, and they're having these thoughts about it, but they're not really even acknowledging it. And that's where the cognitive therapy comes in, and there's a wonderful book called Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy by Dr. David Burns. And it's amazing. It's a self-help book, and people can pick that up and go through it if they're in mild depression, and it's helped people even as well as therapy. But if you're, you know, deeper, then you can use that as a guide with your therapist to kind of work through those, because it's a real hands-on way of actually looking concretely at your own personal thoughts and what's behind them, what triggers them, and it gets you a real good insight. And it really helps when you start changing those belief systems, then your depression lifts. But there's different. That's one just recommendation for somebody who's just interested in trying to figure that stuff out. But therapy also is a very effective thing. So yeah, and what you've done with that exercise is a little step in what they do in that book. It's a cognitive kind of therapy kind of thing where you're actually looking at, because your moods don't just happen for no, your behaviors. Depression just doesn't bang, just happen, and you have no clue, and you think it's all hormonal, and sometimes there is a little chemical thing, but not as much as people think. It is mostly, I mean, it might make you more susceptible to feeling down, but how you think about things is then how you feel. Like, you can't wake up one day and say, oh, I'm just worthless and I don't feel good, and then you're just happy and running around. Like, so what you're telling yourself is affecting how your day is going to go. If you have a day, feeling like today's not going to go well. Well, guess what? You never live up to your lowest expectations. You never live higher than your lowest expectations.
Right.
So if you have an expectation of that, and like a two, you're not going to go to a five. Your thoughts really, really do have a big impact on emotions and behaviors.
Well, it's like the scripture in Proverbs, you know, so as a man thinks, he is, you know,
right.
And it really is true. Hey, Dr. Minton, we have, you know, I'm going to have to take a few calls here. Gotten so engrossed in this conversation, I've forgotten. So callers, we haven't forgotten you entirely. We're on you. I want to bring into the conversation caller 0210. Caller, please tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Sandy from Baltimore.
Hi, Sandy. Welcome to Coffee with Kim. Do you have a question, a comment?
Well, just sort of a comment. I think this has been a very good discussion, because I'm on the other side of it. I'm the family member that had to deal with a spouse and just didn't understand it, didn't understand what was going on. But I also understood when we finally did get him help, because he came to me and said he wanted to kill himself, my husband. And when we had such a great relationship, I just didn't understand. But a lot of stress in his life had caused some things and loss. And so we got him to go to our regular doctor. That was all we knew at the time. And he came home from seeing them, and he said, well, she thinks I'm depressed. And I laughed. I said, you are depressed. And he said, no, I'm just stressed. So he definitely didn't recognize it in himself, or didn't want to admit it. I'm not sure what.
I think sometimes people don't like this. They think it's a stigma, and they don't want to label it like depression. Like, stress sounds more palatable.
Yeah.
But stress does affect, and anxiety and stress all can lead to depression. And if you have suicidal thoughts, so you're on the depression spectrum for sure. But stress could be a causative factor, and it's how you're dealing with the stress. Are you then internalizing that stress as, I'm not good enough, I'm not worth enough, I can't handle this, there's no way I can come out of this? And it's those words you're telling yourself about the stress that lead you to the depression. But sometimes people just feel they don't like that label. But we got to get rid of those labels, because it helps identify what we're going through, and then it helps us get on a path to recovery if we kind of admit that's what it is. And then, because it is, I don't want to say it's pretty, I don't want to say minimize it and say it's easy, but it is a very treatable situation. Like, depression is treatable, and many people do come out the other side of it if you get proper treatment. And so it's important to acknowledge what you have so then you can go and get some treatment as opposed to trying to hide it, because if you just hide it, then it eats you away. You just kind of spiral down and down and down, and it's a difficult thing. Although there are some people, like supposedly there's 70% of people within 15 months automatically come out of depression for a bit. Without any treatment, but I'm not encouraging anybody to just sit through that for 15 months, because it's torturous and it's horrible, and it also leaves a lot of things that you didn't do and issues and things, and a kind of, it's not a very healthy way to just sit through it. So it is good to get some help, and you know, also praying to God and having Him involved in the recovery is amazingly helpful. I've seen a lot of people that has helped also in combination with
absolutely therapy. Well, and that makes me think of Christian counseling, biblical counseling starts with the scripture of 1 Corinthians 10:13, where we're told, Paul tells us, no temptation which can be not a test, a downward spiral, anything that's coming against us, nothing that comes against you can overtake you except what is common to man. So Paul's saying, and it kind of comes back to Dr. Mitten, what you were talking about. It's like what we face as humans, we unfortunately are not the first ones. You know, it's kind of a normal thing to man to have to face the grief that we face and the despairs that we face. We go all the way back to the Bible of so many of, you know, David, as I mentioned earlier, you know, when he lost his sons, Elijah, and for all of those wonderful people out there that are listening, that are doing everything right. You know, Elijah was doing everything right, kind of like what Sandy had said. You know, he had this great victory. He was in, you know, doing wonderful things for God. But yet one person, Jezebel, said something to him. It caused him, I guess it hit that one thought he had. Don't you think, Dr. Mitten, hit that one thought of how that he felt about himself, his unworthiness. So we all have that one thought or one thought. Yeah. And it hit him. Yeah. And it caused him to go running away. Even though he was doing everything right, and he said, "I've had enough. Just take my life, Lord." You know, so Jonah, Jonah was so angry he ran from God. So no matter where we are, to understand that there is hope, and that God tells us that nothing can happen except God is faithful. He will provide a way out, and this is why I wanted to do this show today. Yes, I know many people who have suffered deep depressions and they've just faced it alone, and there was hope on the other end. But do we really want to suffer alone? Do we really want to hope that there is help on the other end when there are people around us? Sometimes the way that God provides us a way out is through someone like a Dr. Mitten or a counselor that we can go to. A friend, it's the conversation of being able to step out and say, you know, when I open the show, how are you? Really, you know, to really go that extra step. If I had not had those people in my life, I mean, they were my healing agent. So many times in retreats and conferences that I do, I talk about how incredible it is that God has allowed us as human beings to be a healing agent with Him in the lives of those around us. That by having the time to sit and listen to other people's hurts and to really be able to encourage them, oh gosh, let me drive you to a counselor. Let me help you find someone that can really get that next step. That we literally become hand in hand healing agents with Christ in bringing that person to the end of this. So, and besides being able to be a person who is, you know, the flesh, Christ in flesh, helping someone, the person who is going through it, if they are courageous enough to speak about it, think about the hope that they give others even in their struggle. Don't you agree, Dr. Minton, that we pick up hope from others who are vulnerable and open enough to say, yeah, I'm dealing with this, but I'm battling it.
Yeah, because it definitely gives you hope. You see somebody else has gone through it, and they've come out the other end, and you're like, well, then there's hope for me. And when somebody can open up about their feelings and about it, then it allows you to open up and not feel like you're the only one that's gone through it, because there's so many thousands of people who've gone through this. It's like the number one it's one of the number one of this of the psychological problems that exist.
Well, and you know, to move away from condemnation, we have another caller. We're 6 minutes to closing out, but I do want to take just a minute and take this one more caller today. Caller 3083. Welcome to Coffee with Kim. Yes. Hey, your name is
Sandy.
Hey, Sandy.
Sandy.
Sandy, hey, do you have a question for us?
Yes. Well, first I want to thank Dr. Minton for having the discussion, and you, Kim, for having the discussion today on depression and helping to eliminate the stigma associated with it. I think it's a big deal across the country for many, many, many people. And also, I wanted to bring up a huge point with many people that do seek help, that there are many, many therapists that are available, and I want women and men, children, anyone that does seek help to realize that even if they are with a therapist, that it may not be a good fit, and so don't give up if they feel that that is not a good fit, because there are others where they may find that it is a good fit, and you know, that is available, because you know they need to empower themselves, you know, to keep moving forward.
That's really important, because you really there are people who don't fit. Like, they may go to therapy and they finally get to go to therapy, and then they find out this is not working. Well, then it's okay to find somebody that you more connect with and has a better strategy that works with you, because not everybody works well with everybody. So you got to really take it upon yourself. Give it a little bit of time. If it's not working, it's nothing wrong with you. You need to move on to another therapist, and that's fine.
Oh, thank you so much. What a valid point, because there again, if we go and it's not the right match, then we come back to that disgusting thought of we're not. So, Sandy, thank you so much. Someone needed to hear that today, and I thank you so much for that. Oh, my goodness. Well, we're down to 3 minutes. What an incredible show this, I hope, has been for everyone. I know it has been for me, and I feel like it has been for everyone based on some of the things that we're hearing. So what, Dr. Minton, would be a final word? I'm sitting out here. I'm listening. I want to believe you. I want to think that there could be hope in my life, but what do I do? I mean, how do I even know where to go? What is my starting point? What would you suggest for that person out there? What would be their first step that they could do today?
Well, the first step would be I guess you should go to your doctor to make sure there's nothing else going on, no interactions with medications and stuff. But don't just stop there when they just say, well, here's medication for you. The next step would be to ask for recommendations through friends or looking, online for recommendations of good cognitive therapy. I'm biased towards the cognitive therapy because I've seen it work. And as far as all the studies out there, that is the most effective treatment out there for depression, and it's been very, very successful. And it's Aaron Beck's the one who started that, and David Burns, they're both the top gurus in that whole area and have had reams and reams and reams of success of doing therapy and help clients recover and not use medication. And they've come from the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. And there's that book also, the feeling good, the new mood therapy book is also helpful if people want to pick that up. And I'm not advocating. I have no bias or any kind of connection to that at all. I just know that's a very useful thing from all the different therapies that I've been trained in. I found that the most effective for anxiety and depression because it's very hands-on and it really works. So I would, give that a shot and look through word of mouth or something for a person who's trained in cognitive therapy, because that's just my recommendation. Now you may find someone who's a behavioral or there's other things out there that can also work, but my bias is that.
I love that. Well, there's some really good steps for someone, and I loved how you even said if you don't know where to go, get online and find some names and then call and ask and call a pastor. You know, the main thing is to reach out and to break the barrier, to take the stigma away, to I finally looked in the mirror and said, you're worth fighting for. You know, I had people around me that I found myself worthy to fight for because I had people around me that I loved, that I wanted to be my best for. So for you all who are listening, it's time for us to sign off. I want to again thank you, Dr. Mitten, for being with us. But my final word for you who is listening is to find yourself worthy to fight for. Do what you need to do. The Bible, David says that he called out to God from the depths of his despair. He called to him, called to God, and asked him to help you have the courage to reach out to a friend, reach out to a hotline, reach out to someone. Break the barrier today. You are worth it. Thank you, Dr. Mitten, and for all of our friends who are listening, we'll see you next Monday at 10 o'clock, Coffee with Kim. Thank you so much for joining us. See you next week.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for joining Coffee with Kim, a moment where your past pain connects with your future purpose to create your unique and powerful story.